We will call the Thursday, November 14th Unified Development Ordinance Advisory Committee meeting to order. So for a quick roll call, we have myself, Dave Schultz, Jeff Olson, Billy McHugh, Dan Transier present, so we do have a quorum. We also have staff, Jason and Christy, and if we could have introductions from our team from Seal Levine, I appreciate that.
So I'm Nick Davis from Hustle Levine.
Jackie Wells.
Thank you. And then, as a duly constituted or duly appointed committee, I'll put it out there for we do have to follow OMA. So, any public comments? Not seeing any guests from the public. There are none. Now we have our agenda. First item is our review of the co-diagnostic memorandum, which we've had some extra time to review that since we didn't have our meeting scheduled last month. I take it the staff or does our consultant do one? Who wants to kind of do the overview of that one first?
We'll do that.
Okay,
so almost everybody has their copy, it looks like, right? Everybody's got a copy? Okay, I just want to make sure. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through the diagnostic memo. It is broken up into several sections here. So as we go through this, what I would do, or at least what I would recommend that we do, is obviously it's a small group, somewhat informal. If you feel like you have a very pressing question and you want to make a comment, obviously you can stop us. We can talk. Otherwise, I'd say let's try to get through this or at least through each section, and then we can go back for any questions or comments. But up front, just kind of breaking down the intent of the diagnostic memo is to start to outline how we want to move forward and kind of knock out the scope of work for the UDO. So the first thing that we wanted to make sure we did was review the comprehensive plan, make sure that we bring the current code, the current zoning codes, up to speed or up to snuff to what is currently identified in the comprehensive plan, what the long-range goals are. So the first couple of pages here are what some of the comprehensive plan goals and policies and proposals were, and then how that's going to fit into our approach in the UDO. So that's the first section. The second one, we talk about the community outreach that's been done up to this point, getting some of that insight, what some of those challenges were, what we were hearing. So that's a little bit of what we're going to talk about. And then we want to talk about the proposal for the structure of the UDO. What's it ultimately going to look like? How do these sections start to maybe get reorganized, bring in new standards, new requirements, and then make it a little bit more easy to digest, a different kind of workflow. And then ultimately, we have a little bit more of a detailed breakdown of what that looks like. We can talk about that. Some of those things may change, but ideally what we're trying to do is this is where we think it needs to go. This is what it should look like. These are the major sections that will make up ultimately the UDO as we go through this process. We can talk next steps once we get through all of this, just kind of where this is going, what some of our next objectives are, what we'll be working on, and give you a sense of what even that at least short-term timeline looks like. So the first thing I want to go through, unless you have any questions just about structure and what we're going to talk about here, I'm going to start going through on page 2, the comprehensive plan, goals, policies, and principles. And I'm not going to read all of these to you. So what I would do is as we go through maybe page by page, if there's something that you have a question about, why don't you just stop me and ask me if there's something that we need to be looking at, or you just have a general comment, that's perfectly fine. Some of the things that stuck out to us was one of the comprehensive plan's goals, ensure that proposed new residential, commercial, and industrial developments are compatible in scale and design with their surrounding areas. We just want to make sure that inside the UDO, we're starting to review and right-size dimensional standards. So some of the first things that we're going to be doing right out of the gate are reviewing the text, the language, but also making sure that the actual graphics and the visualizations that are in there better represent what you're trying to accomplish or are better representative of what's been identified inside the comprehensive plan. Support the maintenance and rehabilitation of Yorkville's traditional residential building stock. Again, just maintaining those existing zoning standards or maintain existing zoning standards and establish stable neighborhoods. Make sure that the approach and the adjustments to the regulations and these small steps that they build up. So we don't want to radically change any of these regulations. We do want to make sure that there's sort of a consistent design and feel moving forward. The ones that are down below where we talk about, like, promote and implement effective growth management practices, encourage new residential development only in areas where adequate public facilities and infrastructure exists, all of those, just working with staff to make sure that we're evaluating and amending the zoning map as needed, ensuring to reference the future land use map. I think we were talking about, you know, in the future there might be some amendments that need to happen to the comprehensive plan sort of long term after even the zoning code has been updated, but we want to make sure that we, to the best that we can, reflect the recommendations in the comprehensive plan and make sure that those all get captured inside of the zoning map. We don't anticipate massive changes to the zoning map, I mean, based on some of the discussions so far, but as we get into that, that's something we'll be reviewing and discussing.
One thing I just want to interject, we did mention that because this is a two-year program, that we'll be halfway through our comprehensive plan, so we need to identify areas that aren't working for us now so that we can address in the UDO and leave some flexibility because we will be updating the comprehensive plan shortly after.
And I think the key word there that we talked about last time we met was that flexibility. There's ways that you can inhibit that and make that very difficult to do in the future. There's ways that we can leave that door open so you do have that opportunity in the future to make those amendments and make sure that it's in line with potential changes that might be out there that you might even be aware of now, but aren't ready to make those changes, or you need to kind of see what the development trends look like so you're able to adapt to that in the future. So being flexible is something we're going to take to heart. Are there any questions on page 2? No? Okay. So on page 3, enhance the visual appearance, pedestrian environment, and functionality of the downtown Yorkville area. Also, just the form-based code may be useful for downtown Yorkville where redevelopment is proposed. So just, again, and we talk about this a little bit later in more detail, just evaluating the proposed downtown overlay district, making sure that we're carrying that forward or extending the form-based building design regulations as appropriate. That balance is going to be important because we do know that there's a lot of good ideas inside the form-based code that's been outlined so far. Just got to make sure that we're folding that in. Might be a one-to-one fold right into the UDO. There might be things that we want to examine for other districts and how they might be able to use some of those concepts or those ideas. But the idea is that we're not, you know, revamping the downtown overlay as it's been prepared up to this point. I know that was a lot of hard work that's been put into it already. A little further down, you know, on page 78, talking about rehabilitate and reuse existing commercial buildings, encourage high-quality new development design, support the preservation, rehabilitation, and reuse of downtown Yorkville's traditional commercial buildings. Again, just making sure that you're evaluating what that process is for adaptive reuse requirements for both commercial buildings, neighborhood retail services, small scale, those types of uses. Anything else that sort of stuck out? That we wanted to highlight, implement a more proactive approach to managing the downtown parking supply. Parking is going to be something over the next couple of sections here as we talk about the parking lot minimums, considering using maximums, the use of maximums, the review and revise of landscape standards, the review and revising of what some of those transitional yards might look like. All that's going to start to happen in the development standards, even in some of the additional definitions that we'll provide in the future. Just making it more clear, easier to understand what the regulations are, maybe kind of right-sizing that for the community in the current conditions. Any questions on page 3? Am I going too fast?
No, you're going fine. Okay. I just want to highlight, Nick said that it's best that we do a hybrid code, so the whole code won't be form-based. It's not appropriate for the entire city, so that it would be a hybrid, and it'll only be in those sections that it's appropriate for.
Yeah, and we're a big proponent of that. I like form-based codes, and they have their place. I don't think it makes sense for the entire community to be a form-based code, but there are some great concepts that are built into that that I think would be much easier to administer. I mean, one of the biggest challenges with the form-based code is to actually administer it. You have to have a lot of expertise, you have to get a lot of eyes on it. There's a lot of design committees that get involved in it. So the lift, just from the staff perspective, as well as the boards and the commissions, anybody that's overlooking it, it really does start to lend itself to, you know, a highly designed specific area, if it's a district or, you know, a block, whatever that might be. Very appropriate for a downtown, especially one where you're starting to think to maybe radically change what it looks like. It makes a lot of sense. When you're talking about it along a corridor, there might be some themes, but you're not hyper-vigilant about what the mullions look like or what the color of this certain treatment needs to be. And that's where I think a form-based code can lose its way, especially when you get into the residential districts. You don't want to be that prescriptive, but there are design sense that we can start to pull in. So that's that hybrid. You kind of get the best of both worlds. Yep. Okay, so promoting, sorry, on page 4, promote promotion of sustainable design and development techniques, just modernizing the engineering design specifications. These are things that we're going to work with on staff. Some of these things are already in place. Some of them might need to be just tightened up. Getting them into the proper sections are going to help. Making sure that we address brownfield and environmental issues for targeted redevelopment sites. Review, revise, and develop new environmental standards. Those are just things that we're going to make sure we're folding in with some of the more recent language is for those requirements, those regulations. Just making sure that we're really up to speed, up to date on what you should be requiring for those types of development opportunities. Procedural amendments. So just inside the administrative standards alone, looking at the procedural amendments that may streamline the development of review and approval process and encourage development investment. In a comprehensive plan, that's a very common statement. That's a really hard thing to do because it is very much a zoning issue, one that you're going to have to address inside of the zoning code. So making sure that we're reviewing and revising and streamlining these administrative processes, but also working with staff, making sure that we know where some of the pitfalls might be. We've heard from the public, we've heard through the comprehensive plan what the challenges are. How do you make it the right level of... And I say this sort of trying to be genuine about it. It needs to be somewhat difficult because you do need these processes in place. You do want there to be some kind of checks and balance. But if there's some things that are administrative that we can just take off the table, they aren't something that needs to require maybe the full board or the full commission, and something that staff can handle, that's what we'd like to evaluate. A conservation district could potentially be implemented. Just evaluate the addition of a conservation design subdivision, a CD, or a low-impact design, whatever that approach might be, just giving somebody the option to do that, and then also making sure that the regulations are in place so they get that kind of development. When they bring it to you, it's what you're expecting. It meets your standards. Those are things that we want to evaluate. Improve cul-de-sac design, require landscaping, sustainable design features, reducing the amount of pavement in areas. Definitely agree. These are things that we want to work with staff and Public Works to make sure that we're addressing what that real issue is, what that challenge is, and then what's the best way moving forward to make sure we're regulating this so this isn't something that you're facing. There's different cul-de-sac designs, incentivizing people to make the connections that they need to make to future subdivisions that might be built, just making that something that's more of a streamlined best practice. Any questions on this page? Okay. So I'm going to let Jackie go through on page 5, just summarizing some of the issues from the public outreach events that we held up to this point.
So this list is a combination of what we heard from this group on the 13th, and also what we heard from the public, the developers, and other people who are more involved in actually utilizing the code for their work. So it's organized based on the type of outreach it is, and going through that list again, it really does align with what was in the comprehensive plan and some of those recommendations of the plan. So this is, nothing really is out of left field here. So starting in the zoning and use standards, thinking about form-based code and how it could be applicable in certain areas, keeping some of these uses that might not be as desirable, special use, so the city has more control over them. Thinking about other types of indoor event conversions for empty industrial spaces, so taking those things into consideration, moving down to development standards, whether there's, some people let us know there was too much parking, not enough parking, so really trying to right-size what those requirements are for different uses, looking at landscaping regulations, clarifying them and also enhancing them, lighting regulations, other sorts of performance standards, how can we improve those, modernize them? I know a lot of communities are taking out, you know, the certain Geiger counts or all those really specific measurements. You guys aren't going to go out there with a Geiger counter and figure these things out.
Fortunately, we didn't.
Well, it helps with enforcement a lot when it's much more general sorts of requirements and specific numbers in those sections. And then down at the bottom for sign regulations, improving and including allowances for multi-tenanted buildings. We're seeing more and more of those types of standards coming forward, especially with the electronic message boards, the LED signs. How can we address these types of new technologies, trends and temporary signs, the feather signs, things like that going forward. So moving down to the subdivision standards, some things that are directly tied into that comprehensive plan, no cul-de-sacs or eyebrow street layouts, some concern about the layout of the streets, more open space or different styles of subdivisions, so the conservation styles, that was something directly in the comp plan that is reiterated here in this from the outreach that we heard. And then back on page 6 in our administration and enforcement, so really streamlining that review process, whether it's for engineering review or other sorts of procedural reviews. Adding in administrative relief, like Nick was saying, so there should be a level of public review for some decision, but there's also other areas where it could be more administrative and would take things off of either the Planning Commission or the City Council's table. A big thing for Yorkville is the restarts of the dormant subdivisions and really creating a process where that's easier and you all are able to bring those subdivisions up to today's standards instead of the standards of before the recession. So how can we look at that, maybe update the PUD process so it's less burdensome and encourages more as-of-right development so we don't see as many using our actual zoning code more instead of having all these additional ordinances on top would not only help you all administer the code, but help people really understand what's regulating their property. So that's a pretty good overview of what we heard during public outreach. Is there anything that you all remember bringing up that we didn't capture here? Anything we missed?
There was something I brought up that it didn't show up on here, but I know we talked about maybe another location. It was the concept of accessory dwelling units. Yeah. In the downtown, we do have, in the older part, homes that converted dwelling units over garages, and it's becoming something that's of need, because people are, you know, staying with families longer, you know, children are staying longer, and people are converting those accessory buildings into living space.
Like a detached garage.
Correct.
Horse barn.
Correct. Mother-in-law suites. And we don't have anything in our ordinance that permits that now. And I don't know if that's something that the council is interested in thinking about.
I don't think anything would be off the table. Would you, Dan?
No.
Okay.
Everything's open to discussion.
Yeah. I mean, it's a matter of are we allowing, as in San Francisco, a 100-square-foot shed to be converted with utilities and allowed to be rented for $1,200 a month.
You could try.
That actually happens elsewhere. The garage conversions, I think that's something that's probably something that's willing to be heard. Yeah.
I think our approach, too, and having talked about this with staff, and really that's just maybe more so how we operate, we'd like to, where we can, explore ideas. Not necessarily always giving you an option, but just saying these are the things that we're considering, and you get to respond back to that. Boy, that seems to kind of hit our issue and address it in a way we want to, or, you know, not having seen this and seeing how we'd regulate it, not appropriate. So I think that's something we'll do in the next round. This just gives us a sense of what's our foundation, where should we be moving forward from, is there anything in here that's absolutely off the list? Seems like up to this point everything's sort of on point or in line with what you're expecting to see, and once you start seeing some standards, regulations, and visualizations, I think you'll have a better sense of, is this what we should be doing moving forward?
I don't understand the rationale on no triangular or pie-shaped lots. That jumped out to me.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah. So that's what came up.
Why, though? You know why?
I can't speak. I guess I wasn't there. What I can say is these are public comments. Yeah. We're making sure that we're hearing what everybody's saying. We're putting it down. We don't want anything to be discarded.
Yes. Okay. So we've had a couple of developers. not one of them, but that the way that they have been laid out, Heartland was one. Mm-hmm. Where
with the extreme angles.
With the extreme angles, yeah. It creates setback issues. Then the types of housing that come, so if a development sits for a while and then we see change in housing product type, now it's an issue, they need a variance or they need some kind of relief. So if we can avoid those irregular shaped parcels as much as possible, or at least have them in a way that the setback and the remainder of the parcel is wide enough to accommodate a home and a rear yard.
There are parcels in town that have been built where when you build them, they meet front yard setback, rear yard, but then your side rear is the same, and it might be a 10-foot because it's an irregular shape. Yeah. I'm okay with your traditional standard pie shape, but yeah, you do get into some of those really quirky lots, and then you have 25 feet at the front yard, they fan out to 300 feet on the back, but they're not that deep.
Correct.
So then that's when you start to run into problems. I think, you know, planning-wise, we always try to avoid those kind of things.
Sure.
But cul-de-sacs is one that's in here that their, you know, recommendation is no cul-de-sacs, no eyebrows.
What is an eyebrow street layout? That doesn't, I don't
think. It's like this where it's kind of offset.
Or even more elongated.
Or like, yeah, just yeah, a little like this, bit of a,
you know.
Yeah. So like a really ugly eyebrow.
I would say
public works.
Fox
Hill, is that one? There's a couple of those.
You'll see some in Fox Hill.
Yes. Yeah.
You'll see some in Whispering Meadows with the eyebrows. But I think part of it, one of the biggest issues I have with the cul-de-sacs and the eyebrows is no islands. And that's a public works directive here. Mm-hmm. If they're designed right, they function. And they're much more, they're much better to have. Instead of 90 feet of pavement, if you put the island in there, you size it right so it can be accommodating a school bus if needed. And a fire, those kind of things. It just has to accommodate the utilitarian needs. So maybe they have to be bigger to do that. And so,
their response is, we have to maintain it. So a lot of this, and this is a good conversation to have, because a lot of these comments are coming from the operational side of right now we can't maintain this. But we have to look at the city growing in the future
what we expect. Aesthetics-wise and maintenance, well, let's compare other communities. And this will be a great conversation, let's compare other communities. How do other communities that have the same type of equipment that we have maintain and operate the same type of, so that, you know, 99% of our cul-de-sacs are 130-foot, 120-foot diameter, 90-foot pavement. They're all the same. They have eyebrows. You know, they have triangular-shaped lots. These are all issues that are everywhere. So to take them off the table, you know, I want to keep things on the table as much as possible like we're talking. So, I don't want to just add this one, but before we go to the next section, which is the structure, do we want to go through, any other comments, items in here that anybody else had that they want to discuss on these before we go into the next spot?
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate, this is feedback that we've heard that's been collected from, this isn't really our feedback.
So this is from you, we all know.
Yeah. I think to kind of go back to one of the comments before, I hear a series of ways that we can address, so like the pie shape's a good example. You could either say don't allow them, or you do allow them, but you have to rethink the way you identify or snap the line for a front setback, side yard setback. So there are different strategies. So maybe there are some pylons that do make sense. That
because it starts at the setback.
Right. In good practice, if you have a building envelope determined, you know, so your lot is required to be 80 feet. That's our standard. You know, our standard lot's 80 feet for the city. So your front setback is 30 feet. Well, measured on the back side of that, it should be 80 feet. So you have a requirement. In order to get that, your 30-foot might become a 60-foot setback in order to achieve that. That's what we have to maintain, is it's not necessarily a front yard setback. It's can you maintain the minimum lot width, which in turn is the building envelope. But who knows? Someone can come in, and this is where I like the flexibility of lot sizes.
Right, so that we're not stuck with our minimum, which is 12,000 square feet, which is...
And I know that's in here in your comments as well as in the comments from the public to look at those kind of things. I mean,
is there a need for smaller lot sizes?
There is, from developer standpoints, to be able to meet that return of investment to get the lots that they need in there. And it brings down the cost of a home, so for more entry-level homes, too.
Because you can also look at it on the aspect of you can still do 12,000 square foot lots, but instead of 80, if they're 60-foot lots, they're deeper. And they're actually less expensive because you have less infrastructure on the front side of the lot.
What are you going to do with a 5,500 square foot lot?
What if I go that
low? More like
it's targeted. That's what it's targeted.
Lot lines. I mean,
that's about it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you look at Naperville's redevelopment in the downtown, they're a great example of small lot, high-end homes.
Big house.
But I think
tear downs, zero lot lines, and they're I don't foresee us doing anything. But we could have tear downs in the downtown, and those lots definitely don't conform.
There's a need for people to build less expensive homes.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately right now the national guys are, you know, building boxes. But, you know, if they had smaller lots, you know, I think if we had requirements where they have to have some kind of architectural, mm-hmm. I mean, you go to Colorado and they have beautiful small homes.
Yeah.
You know, you think it's custom builders, but it's the national guys.
Really?
The national guys here, they build a box. I mean, you can't tell where the front of the house is.
A happy meal after a happy meal.
Yeah.
Yeah, because their infrastructure price is so high
right.
that the amount they can put into the home is offset. I mean, if they could save $10,000 on infrastructure, you could put that back into the home and actually make it much more pleasing. That's kind of where we're saddled with a problem, I think.
Yeah.
But
the width versus the depth, too, where there's no conservation. You got the more backyard, but mm-hmm. it's a shallower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
And talking front yard setbacks, you know, like a 30-foot constant front yard is not as useful. You know, I'm always of the mind. I'd like a 25 or 20-foot front yard. That's your driveway. And then maybe you can make the parkway bigger so your second car, you know, that 8 foot's kind of dead space.
Yeah.
You know, if you manage to get 20 feet and 20 feet, you know, you're still doing that. Or just cut it down to 20 foot and you park one car, put it in the backyard. I mean, that's kind of something I have always thought would be much more flexible. You can't park two cars in that driveway at 30 feet. You get ticketed in the city.
Yeah, so I mean, these are things
that flexibility we want to work in, and I think you guys have keyed in on that here.
So I think we can, and I think these are options and things that we'll have to kind of work through, mm-hmm. We'll put it back to staff, make sure we're even on track. These are different ways that you can approach this. These are different strategies for regulating what a front yard could look like and how you pick up more space in the backyard or maybe decrease in the lot width so you can, you know, start playing around with some of that room, get smaller lots in here that are meeting some of the market demand that you're hearing about. But also maybe remaining flexible. That doesn't happen everywhere. It might only happen in certain districts. Might be only appropriate in certain districts. So those are things that we'll definitely look into. Any other comments inside the issues from the public outreach event?
I have a question on the intent of the sidewalks that should be required on one side and then
So I had a big no on that.
Yeah, we also have a big no on that.
Right. I didn't know what that intended to do, if it was a specific road classification.
Yeah, we're talking a collector road or arterial, something that maybe has a regional.
It was brought up as a public works comment because there's more cost and maintenance for sidewalks, believe it or not, than paths. Mm. And so to cut down there, need to have to continue to sidewalks. Yeah. Okay, so what we're realizing is in subdivisions, when the concrete is poured, and so you have that 1 year window, mm-hmm. people are damaging their sidewalks during the winter with the salt. Mm-hmm. So then they come back into the developer. And they say, and usually it happens after that 1 year mark, and they're like, you know, our sidewalk, it's been accepted, so now the city has to go in and we have to repair that. So that has become, it's more costly for concrete repair work mm-hmm. than it is for asphalt path. And so that's where that conversation came up. And he actually mentioned that he wanted it within the neighborhoods, and I'm like, that would be awful because I would not want to buy a house on the side with the path. I would want the side with the sidewalk. So that
issues with the parking.
Southbury
in Autumn in Oswego, the subdivision of Southbury, which is a big
one.
Ocean Atlantic originally did. They have it going through like the main section.
Look at those
they have
concept
plan. Yeah. So it's not a ton of lots because not a lot of lots come off the main drag, but. They do. I mean, as a builder, it's kind of a pain because it's there, and you got to build a house, so you're having all this equipment go across that.
Sure.
So we end up having to replace it. So I don't think you can win either way.
No. And then one thing on parking, we have comments on both sides. Parking's too high. Parking's too low. You know, it's kind of a. You see it at certain places, there's not enough, and then there's way too much.
I think there might be inadequate handicap parking in some spaces.
So Dave did our parking study for us.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for the downtown.
For the downtown. Yeah. Inadequate.
Especially with the amount of baby boomers who are going to be hitting retirement age and the need for handicap parking, there's probably then also, conversely, too much standard parking in some of the big lots, like out the Target, etc.
Exactly.
I think the consultant in their recommendation is look to market market standards, what the market bears. I do like the idea of developers bringing forward what they're recommended based on history and if they can substantiate that. Mm-hmm. And then balance that against what our requirements are. You know, we see it, some users, they want far more than what is required. You know, they know they'll have the demand, but others, they can prove that they don't need that much. So I think there'd be a great place to balance that and save having these massive parking lots. So, but yeah, we do have areas we need to meet more parking, downtown in particular, on certain aspects. But that's one, that'll be a fun one to come to see what we have on that.
What do we typically allow in subdivisions for parking?
So we require 2 off-street parking per residential for single-family detached.
So the 2 driveway spaces mm-hmm. is what we would require for that. Now, once we get into townhomes and then apartments, those will typically have off-street guest parking.
What about on-street parking?
It's not a requirement, but it is allowed by code unless restricted. So we don't... I think there are only a couple spots, a couple neighborhoods, Fox Hill, and a couple others that have actually designated on-street parking, where it's striped out. So, Prairie Meadows, I think, or which one? One right behind Menards.
That's Prairie Meadows.
They're right next to the park. There's a little there.
Someone just came to me yesterday, and they said in Shure Grove, they do not allow it in any subdivisions.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And that seems pretty... strange.
On the street? Is it after a certain hour?
They said no parking.
You should talk to the mayor.
We kind of went through that where we were looking at restrictions.
Yeah. Right.
Well, Oswego has the overnight restriction.
Plainfield does too.
If you had a party, I know it's been a fall when we did Blackberry Woods, Cannonball, and coming in, there's no parking there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true in Sugar Grove, but there are communities where you have to report it. So if you call it in prior to say I have an event, we're going to be parking. They give you like a 1 day.
And it's the PD. You have to call the PD. Yeah.
Okay.
Any other thoughts on this one before we go on? Or are we good with that section?
This is just a brief overview of the structure we're proposing for the code for the UDO. So we're bringing in a lot of different sections of the municipal code in general, so different chapters, including, of course, the zoning code, subdivisions, parts of the building regulations, stormwater and floodplains, landscape, the appearance code, and then portions of are incorporating existing text for some other sections of the code as well that really fit in with the UDO. So there's a lot of things to consolidate and to streamline. So this is an entirely new UDO structure to really try to get to that. So our first would be the general provisions. This would be very, very similar to the opening chapter for all of these, or the opening section for all of these different titles. And definitions right up front, so everyone kind of starts off on the right foot and knows where to reference back if they have a question. Next, you get into the zoning district standards. So this is the part of the code, I think, that everyone, when they think about zoning, they think about the districts. So you have it'll have the establishment of the zoning districts, the intent and purpose of what those are. It'll go over what's permitted, what's a special use, what's not permitted. And then the bulk and dimensional standards. So, like we were talking about, the front yard, side yard, rear yard requirements. So that'll all be in.
Is this a standard chapter layout for new UDO chapters?
Yes.
So this is something that you'll see a similar layout in other communities.
And what's helpful with this structure is because it's smaller chapters, you have fewer chapters, you know, it gives you a more more direction. So you start at chapter 3 with the zoning district standards, and then you go to 4 and then 5, and then so you get all of your information in a more sequential way rather than zoning districts, that's the first chapter, and then you have to jump to chapter 7 for off-street parking, and then to this other part of the code
like
for landscape.
One of my annoyances, life is that you go from municipality, 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 and everything is in different spaces, where it's construction, in specifications, everything is the same from job to job, no matter what. You know where to look. So as long as it's somewhat standard,
it's closer to that. Okay. It's not that. I wish it was that. I wish we get everybody on the same page of like, this is how we should do this. But it, at least this will be easier to, when you go to a, if it's a newer code, it's going to fit more of the structure. Like definitions is going to be consolidated. We've all agreed that's the direction we need to move away from the 70s codes that got us here. So I do think this is going to be a lot more similar to what you're probably seeing in other communities. There's some uniqueness because you're doing a UDO and not a straight zoning code. You're bringing in other sections to this, but we're trying to keep this easy to digest and a more clear structure, so it's easy to also update and amend, and you're not pushing people around to all these different areas.
So then usually the last section of Chapter 3 would be that table of permitted and special uses, and that'll directly reference those sections of Chapter 4 for uses that have additional regulations. So if it's maybe a drive-through, you have drive-through standards, so that would be referenced in the table, and then you would go to that section of Chapter 4 and find that specific use standard. And then you move on to Chapter 5. These are development standards or standards of general applicability, so they're going to apply to districts or to the whole city regardless of the use. That's things like parking, landscaping, fences, all those sorts of types of supporting development that you see throughout the city. So next we would get into the subdivision standards. So this is the way it's structured currently, it's more the admin portions of the administration portions of the subdivisions. The engineering specifications are going to be a separate appendix document that wouldn't be codified with the UDO to give you all more flexibility in updating it. So you wouldn't have to go through a text amendment process to update that.
So we can keep up to date with current engineering practices and our...
How do you approve those? Does it have to go through a committee?
It would. It would go through a committee. It just wouldn't be a public hearing process.
It's a little more streamlined, and it gives you all a little more control and more flexibility that way. And then admin and enforcement, so the last chapter there, we'll just have every single portion of administration that you could want to have, so you don't have to flip back and forth to try and figure out what is and is not needed.
I have no problem whatsoever putting more day-to-day power in your two hands to take care of little stuff that doesn't have to go before a committee. If that is part of this, that makes sense to me.
In certain areas, it will give us some more flexibility.
So in other communities, we've offered or we've proposed administrative relief for if there's a 10% change in the side yard setback, or really, you know, it's a standard. There's structure there. There's standards of review, and then if you all feel like it's something that the commission or the city council really needs to take a look at, they have that flexibility to bounce it back. But it gives you all a break from having to give variances to things you would always give variances to, but also the kind of the safeguard with the standards and also their ability to kick it back up.
Because like right now, I asked Christy the other day on an issue for myself and my own lot, and I asked her about the administrative relief, and we don't have it on there. Now, the PZC does have administrative relief that doesn't have to go to council. Right. So, you know, if it's under a certain percent, you just authorize it and it goes. But staff could do that. You know, you could authorize staff, and maybe that threshold for the PZC gets increased.
Correct.
As, you know, trying to reduce how far you need to go, you know, staff takes 10%, PZC takes 20%.
Right.
You know, so you can make it easier so that it doesn't have to come all the way back around to the city council for an approval. You can cut out a step and give more flexibility.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, and it's an important distinction there is it's the routine stuff. It's things that, you know, you're more commonly already addressing. This has been the tradition in the past. It's probably the tradition as you continue to move forward. Those are the things that you want to fall into that process. But there are some things that need to get escalated. I mean, that's a big issue, and that's going to require a lot of people to be well aware of what's going on and what the change is going to be. So those are those are the types of things that we'll look at, like those little nuances where you can pick up a lot of time. You take time off of everybody's plate, which is what you're trying to do. Put a little bit more on you guys. But
it's bureaucracy, yes.
Yeah, so, same amount of time.
If you're taking a variance away through the whole process, it saves me time, probably.
So that's important. Okay. Any other questions within the... Jackie and I talked about this when we were driving out here. I mean, this is probably... Unless something is glaringly missing here, it's probably hard for you to start breaking down what the chapters are going to look like. But once we get to this, you know, it should be familiar. I mean, you'll recognize this structure. Okay, so some of the preliminary recommendations for the UDO. And again, I won't read all of these. I'm just going to read out the ones that stick out to me. But maybe by page, if something's sticking out to you, you have a comment or a question, let's be sure to address it here. But this is what's in addition to the public outreach. So this is also our review. This is discussion with staff. This is just our knowledge, having worked on these types of, if it's a UDO or a zoning code or just an update in general, what some of those strategies or approaches might be, things that we know we want to address or at least touch on as part of this UDO project. The reorganization of the existing regulations, definitely something we want to work on. The use of plain English, less legalese. You know, it doesn't have to be something that you have to have a law degree to figure out what the interpretations are.
That's why Reagan's going to be great, because she used to whisper in my ear all the time.
Yeah. And I think it's important. A lot of that can be done with just plain text, make it a little bit easier to digest, but also some of the graphics, the visualizations that our team will prepare to make it more clear what you're trying to accomplish. Also, ultimately, and I'm going to touch on this a little bit later, the infusing of ENCODE Plus and how you're ultimately going to be able to use this this zoning code is going to be a little bit different than probably what you're seeing in other communities, but I think it's going to be a lot easier to visualize what the recommendations are. You're going to see this in a way that's easier for staff to update. It's more universal because it's something you can access online in a much easier user format. So there's a lot of opportunities and a lot of benefits to the structure that we're moving towards. So that's something that'll make it a little bit easier to just understand what's being visualized and recommended. The simplification of existing tables and graphics. I mean, going through this, I think there's a lot of updating and standardizing that'll make this easier. The cross-references, not only just in general are cross-references helpful, but the way this is going to be built into what the final UDO structure is with this ENCODE Plus. When we say cross-reference, it's a link. You click, it takes you right to it. It's going to pop up for additional information if you have it.
Including permit fees.
Oh, yeah, that's in there.
So basically anything you would want to cross-reference to, you have the ability to cross-reference to, you know, within reason.
That would be really nice.
The modifications to use in bulk standards to address nonconformities in zoning districts, and then the modernization of the standards related to land development just in general. And then I had a note here just in our discussion with staff, just this would be a more dynamic online code, and I really do think that's going to make this something that's going to be helpful for developers who are coming in here and trying to figure out what the issues are and what some of the challenges are. This isn't something where they're going to have to dig through the fine-tooth comb to figure out what the standards are. It should be at their fingertips, much easier to bring that into sort of their design practice. General provisions, just those standards that establish the code regulations, some of the things that stuck out there, some of our preliminary recommendations, codify the title and authority of the UDO, establish these general applicabilities, the interpretation, scope provisions, those types of things. Jackie sort of touched on some of this already. That's going to be both from the zoning and the subdivision side, so you're bringing that all into one unified development ordinance, which is going to be great. The retain present provisions related to the relationships with other laws and separability. Just make sure that we're in line. Establish and consolidate the intent and purpose of the UDO. And then just relocating that Title IX comprehensive plan as an article in this chapter. And again, just tying back, we'll make sure we capture anything that's been within those. Two, just talking about definitions. They are scattered throughout. That is something that was common practice a long time ago. We just don't do that anymore. Trying to bring that all into one section, make it a lot easier. So if someone needs a definition, they know to go to the definition section. It seems logical, but at one point it was just not the way people did it. Consolidate all those definitions, retain the rules for interpretation, which is critical. Establish definitions for all uses in the permitted and special use tables. Again, just making this something that when someone's looking for a definition, they don't have to, you know, scour the entire code to figure out what's going on. And then just adding new definitions for new words or phrases, things that, you know, when this code was originally drafted or if you didn't have a chance to amend or update, you're capturing this in your more modern code.
just a question on definition. So if you hover over a general term, mm-hmm. cul-de-sac, does it have the ability to pop up with...
We yes. can do that, yes. Plus, yeah. yes. And you can do that...
So anything that we have in our definition terms, we're not going to take general words, but anything that is technical, that's defined.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and once it's repeated in a sentence, you can knock it out. But, like, the first time it's represented, you could have a rollover, and basically it would pop up, and mm-hmm. dynamically you would see what the definition is. Seems minor, but it's a pretty big...
Instead of actually clicking to go back to the definition while you're reading.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that'll be... it's just one of those, like, small things to us that's, like, really exciting. It's like, you know, that's so obvious. I can't believe we couldn't figure that out. But to be able to do that now, it really does. You don't break someone's flow. They're staying within the section. They don't have to figure out how they bounce back. They don't lose their place, that type of thing. So it's gonna make this code just one more thing that kind of sets you apart. And I think it'll be very helpful to administer and one that I hope people enjoy reading the code. That'll be nice. So nobody ever says that. Add new definitions, we talked about. So just moving on, any other questions about definitions? No? Okay. So just the zoning district standards, some of the preliminary recommendations there. We're consolidating the zoning district definitions, what we just talked about. Revising the zoning district definitions based on the realignment of the zoning districts to the city's future land use map, which is something that I know we're going to be working very closely with staff on to make sure we get that. The nuances here locally, we don't want to lose, you know, some of the context there, what you're trying to accomplish. I know it's not this big new boundary map that we're creating, but making sure that the districts that we define are the right context, you know, they're setting the tone for what you're trying to accomplish. Consolidating the dimensional standards for each zoning district into an easy-to-read tabular format. Again, that's tabular format, but also in this structure inside of ENCODE Plus that's going to allow it to dynamically show you what some of these standards look like based on the types of developments or the types of uses you're talking about. Provide new right-size dimensional standards, clarifying that language. I think when the graphics are done well and the text is written well, they don't conflict against one another. You know, you read something and then you see it and you're like, okay, that's what I just read. And it should be the same way. You look at a graphic and you go back and read the text. They should be talking to each other. They should explain each other and not make it more complicating. Develop new zoning district boundaries. Again, this is something that we're going to work with staff on. Realigning the residential district boundaries or create a new zone to permit more mid-density housing types. I know that's something that we've, not just here, I mean, we're hearing that across the region, so making sure that your code accommodates those types of options as redevelopment starts to occur. Provide areas for new commercial development types, such as mixed-use development. Distinguish the downtown. I mean, having the overlay is a great start, but just making sure that the regulations and some of the other tangibles that are going to be tying into it help you be a little bit more flexible, get the types of uses that are appropriate in a downtown. Expand the amount of industrial zoned land, such as near the Fox Industrial Park, are things that we'll be looking at in that section. Any comments there?
Also, I know we talked about Fox, but let's also look at the northern up along the NSS.
For the use standards, so this just addresses all the regulatory language for determination of the land uses, including the use table to specify which zoning district each use is allowed in or permitted in. That'll also include the special use. The use-based regulations are widely dispersed in the current code, so that's something we're going to kind of bring it all in. So again, you're starting to see a theme here in our breakdown, our preliminary recommendations. We're going to consolidate that list of uses into a single use table. We'll review and revise the use definitions and clarify use determination standards. Cross-reference and use tables to use-specific standards will be helpful, and we'll add those in. Example here is the adult uses. Review and revise existing use-specific standards to update these based on industry best practices. Evaluate all uses to amend the list of permitted and special uses for each updated zoning district based on the intention of each zoning district. And then just adding new uses to the list. Some of those are going to come out of what we've seen. Some of those are going to be removing others that might have been either redundant or outdated. There's some that I'm sure are identified in the comprehensive plan that we want to fold in. So just bringing that all together into a more easy to read, digestible table as opposed to broken out will be very helpful. Any questions about use standards? Nope. Five development standards. This is where we're going to design the regulations for specified elements. So like Jackie said, this is your general applicability. Types of development standards include off-street parking, landscaping, lighting, performance standards. Some of those form-based design requirements will be in there. And again, it's not to make the entire code form-based, but where applicable, there's some aspects of form-based codes that we can build into each one of these sections. We don't want to be cumbersome, but we also want to take advantage of a system that we already know is in place in your downtown, so it's kind of a good opportunity. The city contains development standards in multiple articles right now. Some of the preliminary recommendations are include the elements of proposed form-based code, which I think I've said now about 9 times. Replace the appearance code with the building facade and roof type development standards. Those are some of the, that's starting to like cherry pick from some of the form-based standards, starting to use some of that terminology and what that structure might look like. Building flexibility into the development standards for small businesses like artisans, home occupations, agritourism. Evaluate and revise the schedule of parking requirements. This one's tricky because when we say evaluate, it's looking at, you know, what you're seeing now, what the current trends are, what we're hearing for best practices, but also determining on what's going to be most appropriate for you moving forward. I do like the idea of, as a developer comes in, if they want to provide to you what they think a requirement should be, they can offer that. They need to have the data that supports what they're offering. But that is something that, you know, we can explore. I've seen that in other communities where that's worked. Adjust the loading berth requirements. Okay. Some of these are super specific. Simplify landscape standards for ease of interpretation, administration. Illustrate the requirements with clear graphics. That's something that we can do well. Revising the landscape standards for building foundation, transition yards, what those adjoining uses and zoning districts are addressing, and then the parking lot landscaping requirements in general. I'm just trying to see if there's anything that we called out. So the review and the refinement of these environmental standards or regulations related to the development, that's for those riparian areas. Consolidate all environmental code requirements. This is something that I think working with staff, working with Public Works, just making sure that we bring this all together. Revisit the fence and screening requirements for quality control. You know, potentially prohibiting chain link. Revise the sign requirements to comply with the Supreme Court decision of Reed v. Gilbert, which this is something that we've done on, I couldn't even tell you at this point, just countless. Any code that you come up to that's not in compliance, there's a pretty standard way that we've now started to approach them, but there's some things that are going to be unique.
Can you explain that a little bit for the people that aren't in the planning?
Sure. So in 2015, the Supreme Court heard a case called Reed v. Gilbert. In 2016, they made a decision that when that gavel came down, I think made 80% of the sign codes in the United States non-compliant.
Yeah.
Ours is totally illegal.
So it's... it says that a municipality cannot regulate signs based on their content. It would be a violation of our First Amendment rights to do so. So the case was brought against the town of Gilbert by a gentleman named Reed, who had put up a sign that had non-commercial speech on it in a commercial area, and the town said it has to be like a business identification sign. You can't have that non-commercial speech. I believe it was a temporary sign for like a church event, that he had it out longer than you were permitted to have a real estate sign or something, another type of temporary sign. So that bounced back, and now we are no longer able to regulate signs based on their content. So that takes out a lot of the types of temporary signs that most communities have, your real estate signs, political signs. A lot of municipalities call their, like the signs you can have in a business district, business identification signs. Mm-hmm. Can't call them that anymore because you can't tell if they're a business identification sign without reading it. So anything that would require you to read the sign to be able to enforce the code now has to be, you have to figure out another way to do it. So it can be tricky, but it's definitely possible.
There are ways of doing it.
There are ways of doing it.
It actually fits in really well with the whole form-based approach anyways, because that's really what you want to regulate. It's what it, not what it says, but what it looks like.
And how I think big that, it is, where it is located on the site. So. Yeah.
So that's something that we'll be obviously updating and then also making more clear. Clarify sign type definition. So basically all things that is signs, we're going to have to rework. Allow various materials for signs. You know, one of the things that we heard was maybe increasing the size of monument signs, establish new Jumping ahead here. Establish new sidewalk standards with participation. Obviously, we're going to be working with Public Works on that one. It's going to refer to the subdivision sidewalk connectivity requirements. Retain and consolidate existing performance standards and noise standards. Establish new lighting standards that minimize light pollution. Retain the dark sky concept. You're probably not adopting a dark sky ordinance, but you can adopt some of their principles, their themes. So
we actually have it was a resolution.
But
so
you haven't adopted it, right?
It has been approved by City Council.
It's approved by council by resolution, but it would be nice to have it
codified,
When did you do that? I missed that.
2009.
Yeah.
It's a random
one. You were early, though.
Yeah.
Some of the earlier adopters. Okay.
I'm not so sure that it
took off.
Well, we talk about it, like for the old folks' home that went up by St. Patrick's Church, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't want the lights
Hanging
out in the street
and
them shine down.
And that's part of just our standard code of you can't have more than a certain light, a zero light, foot candle at the property line. That bleed can't happen, but you get the visual of light, so that's where cutoffs and having that kind of criteria in there. But then we run into the issue of signs.
Yes.
Signs emit direct lighting with the LEDs, which they can illuminate far more than a street light. Mm-hmm. So, kind of a catch line too. How do you can't put a cutoff on a sign?
Right.
You can do lumen standards for
but they still project.
Especially in a dark area, you see some of our signs that are meeting
standard, but they're projecting 150 feet of light out onto the ground, which you can see because
there's no street lights along.
They tend to not have monument signs in residential districts anyway. Right? So.
Well, you could because what's located in residential districts are schools, so schools can have those signs.
Subdivision entry signs.
They can be lighted. They may not be allowed to have an electronic. Or an electronic monument sign, but they can be lit in various ways. So there's things they can do. One thing I had to comment on this one before we go back. The neighborhood design manual that was recently approved is a guide.
Mm-hmm.
Not codified, but we do it by resolution.
No, we did it. We did an ordinance.
We didn't do an ordinance,
but it's not.
It's a guide.
It's a guiding document.
Yeah. It's not a requirement. So, as we integrate elements, we want to make certain that it's known that it's elective. That is recommended, but it's not a mandate by any means for that part of it. However, we integrate those, unless we choose to change that from elective.
But there are ways to make elective design guidelines, give them a little more teeth, through the planned unit development process, if aligning with the design guidelines as a standard of review, that gives you guys a little more enforcement to say you need to make these changes based on our design guidelines.
Design manual online. I don't know where my copy is.
Yeah, sure. We can send you a link for it.
The next section, subdivision standards. Some of the preliminary recommendations for the subdivision standards chapter would include, again, relocating those administrative requirements such as plat for submission, plan details, amendments, bonding, and permit and inspection processes, and then to the administration and enforcement chapter. Enhance and modernize subdivision design standards with consideration of best development practices. Introduce new design standards. Add a conservation design or cluster subdivision type or LID with reference to the zoning districts where the subdivision type is best applied, so if it's appropriate where it makes the most sense. Add subdivision road connection requirements based on a road segment length and connectivity index standards. A couple different ways to approach that. A set ratio of intersections to a road segment length, that type of approach. The add open space provision requirements is a design standard for all subdivision applications, which is a comment we heard from the public. I think a comment that we probably heard throughout the process.
Go ahead. Would that be in addition to the required parks?
It could be. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Ensure subdivision utility standards with.
We were just talking back and forth. That may be a little bit overkill. So we'll see. We'll see. Maybe we could just integrate the park standards into this so that.
I think with the conservation open space design, an LID type of development, that's maybe a better way to do it because they incentivize open space versus traditional. You know, yeah. How do we push towards getting a better development, give them more by getting something back? Telling developers would like that better.
Good. Really?
Okay. That's good. Ensure subdivision utility standards with the Yorkville Bristol Sanitary District standards. Coordinate with the Public Works Department as they gather engineering design specifications, which is a part of that appendix that we'll be pulling into our document. So that's not necessarily us drafting it, but it's us bringing it into this document.
Are we going to bring some of that up here for discussion on what do we want? You know, what do we want for our standard road? What do we want for right of way? We'll talk about those, even though it's not codified. We want to see if it needs to be tweaked.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
Okay. And then administration and enforcement. So this is just the requirements. Bringing everything together and making sure that, you know, consolidating it like the way we talked to, bring the code into alignment with how staff and elected appointed officials operate currently. For example, the Planning Commission and Zoning Board of Appeals are now combined. Align all application processes and procedures and submittal requirements, such as for variations, appeals, special uses, PUDs, subdivisions, annexations, and permitting. Revise the PUD regulations to tie the PUD process to the entitlements by right development in zoning districts to obtain better outcomes for master plan developments while adhering to the intention of the underlying district and the comprehensive plan. So I think that one's critical. That's a distinction that I think you're making that we want to make sure is clear in the process. Consider new administrative process for that restart, which we talked a little bit about, for those dormant subdivision developments. Strengthen the process for securing subdivision improvements to ensure the completion of required improvements in a timely manner. That could be based on what improvements are bonded, timing of completion, limitations of to extensions. Review and revise the approval process for development plans to ensure that important scenic assets are retained, or require a public hearing if there's a question regarding a threat to a local asset. Insert administrative approvals in any instance where they could potentially improve the efficiency and function of the administration without impacting the intent of the public process. And I think that's kind of what we touched on earlier, is there's going to be tiers to this approach. I think we're going to show options, and then as we discuss this with staff and ultimately as we open this up to the groups, it'll give us a better sense of where we feel like some of this administrative process can be handed off to staff and where it's appropriate as it is.
I have a question about that. Mm-hmm. Have you had any, or come across any municipalities who have this, who've experienced legal challenges by taking something that would typically be done in front of a committee and then the council that's been handed off to staff?
Not a recent, but I don't know if you have.
As long as there are standards of review. So staff have very clear measurements for making the decisions. They'd be very similar to what Plan Commission and City Council would have as well. Then you have legally defensible decision making.
And there's also an appeal process. So any decision that I make, if the developer is not happy with it, they can appeal to the City Council.
I would assume anything that we do on an administrative relief, we would have that just like our application packet.
Yep.
It would probably be within the application or a parallel document that explains that. And then we don't, I would think that council could approve that so that it's out there so everybody knows what that process is very clearly.
Right, and you guys had one last year. It was with a sign. They disagreed with our interpretation of the sign ordinance, and it went through the appeal process. You'll return what we said. So.
And that's often
no
the case.
No hard feelings.
Yeah, and maybe something just to touch there. I mean, our job here is to leave you with a legally defensible code, so we don't want you to maybe hit some of these issues. So if it's something, if we're coming up against something that we maybe haven't heard before or haven't seen before, we have people that we can reach out to, you know, lawyers or firms that we've talked to. But in terms of what we're recommending here, we're very consistent with what we've seen in other communities, so this is best practice. All right, and then any questions there about the administration? Okay. The last component here that we wanted to talk about, at least in detail, was the form-based code applicability analysis. Some of this, when we drafted the memo, the overlay hadn't been adopted. Now it's been adopted. Less of a point. But knowing that we are folding this into the overall UDO, and then there are some of these elements that we want to pull into other sections. So in terms of the entire UDO being a form-based code, certainly not the direction that we're looking to go. But there are going to be some themes or some approaches inside the design standards or the way that we discuss some of the development standards, what that might look like. So unless there's any specific questions about that, hopefully that maybe addresses those. Okay. And then the last, the appendix, which we are not, I'm not going to do that to you. So the appendix is, the appendix is our proposed UDO chapter structure. So we went over the high level stuff, and I would say 95% of this is probably the direction you'll see at the end. There might be some things that just get tweaked as we go along. So I think what I would do is, you know, I'm not going to ask you to commit this to memory, but definitely give this a glance if you haven't already. Mm-hmm. And just know that as we come back, if anything heavily deviates from what's in here, we'll just make sure to flag it. That, you know, we originally thought this would be in that section. If not, it didn't make sense. Or, you know, we actually pulled this in entirely from the code. It wasn't applicable anymore, not necessary. But I think all in all, this is the direction that we see it going. We've talked about this with staff. We feel pretty confident about what that approach is going to be. Yeah, I really didn't know how I would do this. Read the outline, maybe, I guess. But yeah. So, okay. So I just in general, are there any questions, comments, things that you want to make sure we walk away with? And then I could even go over next steps if that would maybe give you a better frame of reference.
Yes, that's what I was just gonna ask.
Okay. So what's next for us is we are through our first two steps. So the first step was project initiation. Second step was the technical analysis. And that's what we're talking about right now is this diagnostics memo. The next thing that we do is step three, we're going to move into the draft district standards and concepts. So what that's going to entail is our first thing right out of the box is the draft residential and agriculture district standards. So those, as well as the commercial and industrial district standards, are the first two sets of standards that we're going to be looking at. So I think our target, and now I'm going to put staff on the
February.
Set it slowly at the same time, so yes, February. That's our target to get these first rounds of draft standards to staff. I think, and we've talked about this with staff already, this is sort of our first blush at what we think these standards should look like. You know, we fully expect them to get beat up or punched back or, you know, boy, did you think about this? Have you thought about that? And that's sort of this back and forth iterative development as we start working through these. But once we catch a rhythm, that'll be a pretty standard practice for each one of these sections. And then I think where appropriate, we're meeting up with the groups or you're meeting up with the groups and we'll continue moving forward like that. So that's what's on the up kind of next couple of months, the district standards.
So we won't probably meet. Is this group until like February?
February. I have a end of mid to end of February.
Yeah, February. Maybe March. It just depends.
Maybe mid March.
Yep. But that staff.
It is the two sections that we'll have next.
Yeah, that'll also include, so the three that were in there, there's really four, but there's the draft residential and agriculture district standards, there's the commercial and industrial district standards, we'll also start looking at some of the special district standards, which are like open space, PUD, downtown overlay, that type of stuff, and then the proposed zoning districts map, so those are the four things we'll be working on with staff through up into like February and March, and then I think at some point we will want to come back. I think it's as we work through some of these steps, you know, at some point this will get presented back to this group, and ultimately something that we'll present to the public.
So if you're looking at the proposed UDO chapters, it'll be chapter 3 that we deliver next.
Yep.
How much time do you think we'll have in advance of a February-March meeting
to review
for
it.
Us to dissect and review the information? I hate to get it on
How
a Thursday.
How much time do you want?
Well, I don't want to get it on a Thursday and have the next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going
to
be...
I would say our practice is typically 2 weeks.
Okay.
I mean, if I gave you 3 weeks, I still think you probably use 2 weeks, but it just depends. I don't know what the rhythm is here typically, but two weeks seems to be enough. We have also broken these down into more digestible sections. Mm-hmm. We're not giving you an entire ordinance to read. It's like these sections that are appropriate and aligned with one another. So if 2 weeks is appropriate, that's what we would target.
I just don't want to have the agenda published on Friday and then the meetings on Tuesday or Wednesday or something like that. And then over a weekend have a minimal time.
Typically,
I want us to have time.
Totally agree.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you'll probably give it to staff. We'll give you a first level review. Once we give it back, we'll probably set a timeline for a meeting, and as soon as they get it back to us, you'll probably have 2 or 3 weeks.
Correct.
We'll set the meeting out on purpose from when we converse our first rounds of review.
Yep.
Is everyone here good with a couple weeks to review it?
Yeah.
Okay.
A couple weeks,
gives it enough time to have a few nights to set aside and think about it, look through it, make some comments. Okay.
Yeah, and it really honestly doesn't do us any good if we show up to a meeting and you haven't read it. So, I mean, if you only had 2 or 3 days to do it, then we're not going to get out of that meeting what we need to get out of it anyways.
We'll have lots of questions.
Yep.
Yeah. That's
perfect.
And that's what we want is we want to have comments in advance. You know, and some of the big, if they're big issues,
yeah,
those could come in advance before the meeting. That helps staff.
Yeah, and I think we've sort of touched on this, but maybe progressive is not the right word, but we're gonna push, I mean, where we can and make sure that this is the code it needs to be. So, you know, we fully expect there to be some comments or, boy, that's not what I thought we talked about, or, you know, now that I see this, I think we should be even thinking about that over here. That's the point of this process. You're not going to get a perfect piece. You're going to get sort of this working draft that we're all going to help sort of craft. We're going to work with the staff first. It's going to come to you. You're going to help us build it out. You're our touchstone. So when ultimately this goes out in front of the public, they're not shocked or, you know, where did this come from? It should feel like something that came from in-house. That's really the goal here. So, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, any other questions, comments?
Just a general overarching. Would you see or think of any potential implications from becoming home rule to the code?
So for becoming home rule? Off the top of my head, no.
Okay.
I would almost never discourage that. I mean, if that's something you want to go through, but yeah.
No. We'll be teetering on the brink as, you know, we continue in the next several years. So as we're approaching this, if there are any considerations that could be impacted, I know other parts of our municipal code have major implications with home rule.
Yeah.
But this one, if there's anything that affords us changes to give thoughts of that. Okay.
No, I mean, if anything, you'd have more.
We have more control.
You have more control.
Right.
Yeah, but that's a good question. I mean, we could look at that. I don't think I've ever been working on the code while at the same time you were coming closer to that being a reality. I can tell you the opposite is an issue. I've seen a community that wants to give up their home rule, and that's a whole different issue. Yeah, it was my hometown. It was odd. So.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know. Good old Westmont. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions, comments? No? Okay.
If that's it, I don't see any reason not to adjourn. 7:12, we'll adjourn.